Cambridge Breakfast with Julian Clover and Lucy Malazzo.
Cambridge 105 Radio.
Members of the Sue Chi Foundation are working to support residents who lost many of their possessions in last month's Arbury flat fire. Among them is Ethel Mann, who is studying at Cambridge University, also an artist in her spare time. And Ethel is offering to produce digital portraits that people can send to friends and family who they haven't necessarily been able to see during the COVID-19 crisis. Ethel joins me via Zoom this morning. Good morning, Ethel.
Morning, Julian. How are you doing?
Very well, thank you very much. So tell me how you found out about the fire.
I actually found out from the other volunteer, Xin Ling, who lives in the area. So she's the one who's been doing a lot of physical visits and getting in contact with the residents and actually frequently go back and forth onto the site.
And this was a fairly nasty fire, as I seem to remember. Fortunately, nobody died, but I know that a couple of pets were sadly killed during this, and the damage which was done to the building meant that the council had to rehouse them, and also many of the possessions were damaged or destroyed.
Yes, that's right. So definitely the council has rehoused these residents. But I think what we've been helping them is getting the sort of the day-to-day things. So a lot of their personal belongings have been smoke damaged. And basically it's still a crime scene and it's really hard to go back and grab things. And also with the cleaning. According to Xin Ling, the air quality isn't great still over there, as well as this sort of trauma that and the stress that they've been experiencing post the fire. So we're there not just for tangible support, but also for emotional support.
I gather the Sue Chi Foundation has set up a help desk to assist those who have been suffering.
Yes, that's right. From day one, we've set up a help desk where we are hoping anyone in the area who knows people who's been affected can come forward and speak with us, and so then we can get better understanding on how we can help them. So about two residents came to see us, and we've got quite a lot more information through them, as a lot of information has been sort of it's been really confidential. It's really hard to reach out to the council or to the neighbourhood a voluntary organisation.
Clearly don't want you to break any confidences here, but how are they doing generally? Are they kind of getting through all of this?
Yes, we're going they're going through day by day, and definitely there's we've had other volunteers who came along to help with the cleaning. I think on the psychological level, it's really, really nice to have to know that people actually do care and to have that level of reassurance. Rather than, oh, here you go, this is where you're going to live.
Yes.
And up next, oh, you know when it comes. So it's that sort of emotional support that is really, really crucial for this moment.
Yes, yeah. I'm sure the residents of that flat fire in Arbury are very grateful for the help that you're giving. And one of the ways that you're helping is through some artwork, and you're producing these digital portraits, which people can then send on to friends and family, because I guess all of us have been stuck in one way or another of not being able to see people other than over calls like this, over Zoom from time to time. So tell me first of all about your artwork and the style that you've developed.
Yes, so I'm known as an artist in my spare time, like you've correctly mentioned by most people. But secretly, I like to call myself an artistographer. So it's a made-up or creative occupation, combining art and photography, essentially. So it reflects what I do in my abstract pieces, which is the kind of the main art style before I started this portrait. And what I like to do in those abstract pieces to reconstruct memories by combining digital techniques, such as extracting colours and exploring the interplay of light with traditional mediums such as ink, pencils, pens. And really, to me, it's a mindfulness exercise, is to it's more than just capturing nature, but documenting life, that it's more of a personal state of self-discovery. But in terms of the portrait, since we've been in lockdown, it's been really difficult to immerse in nature, taking out the photography, because that's always been my
So what would you do? Would you, I don't know, set out with your camera somewhere and take some pictures, which you'd then take home and get out the pencils? Is that how you would normally do it?
That's right. So I quite like traveling. And what I mean by travel is not just, you know, around the world, but like literally 5 minute walk to me is it's a sense of travel. And because I like to experience life, but with a camera, it's not just capturing what I see, but also how I felt at the time. So after I got those photos, then yes, I go back and forth between my tablet and as well as making hand traditional marks using the pencil and pens and ink.
So you actually, when you're doing this, are you doing, because I know with some tablets you can get a little pencil with them and design that way. Do you draw in that way at all as well?
Oh, yeah. So for these portraits, I've gone completely digital. So because faces are quite personal and I feel quite comfortable to them, because each face I draw is unique and is one and only. So I find using tablet and stylus pen is like a comfort, a safe blanket, so that I know I can stay in this playground and experiment and be creative. Mm. But whereas if I had used my original technique between digital and traditional, I think I would be really uncomfortable, and a portion might take hours or even less.
Is it easier for you to, I don't know, what do you feel the most comfortable with, drawing somebody who's actually sat in front of you or working from a picture that somebody has sent, where they're not moving at all? You know, they're not, you can't say, you know, if you see a shadow on the mark on the side of their neck and you can only just see it in the photograph, you can't say, can you turn around a bit? You've got to make do with what you have.
Yeah, but I actually love the sort of mystery that you get from just getting a photograph and a customised message, because you can write a message in it. And for me, it's so much easier to draw from a photo, because what I'm trying to do is not to duplicate a realistic representation, because that's not my aim. My main is to really think about what the connection is between the photo and the requester and the recipient. And these are the only three, the things I get through.
So do you look at the expression and perhaps try to draw something out, perhaps?
Yeah, like I often try to imagine a scene of where the two could have encountered, and think about what they're wearing, because with in psychology, sorry, I keep referring to psychology, somebody's clothes can tell you a lot about their characters, and it almost is an instant visual clue for me to start on that section. And I'm quite fascinated by also the detail and the fold and the creases and the clothing as well. So it kind of gives me a bit of more time to really gather my thoughts about the story.
So you think you get a different perspective on, so if somebody, I'm trying to look if I've ironed my shirt. I don't think I have ironed this particular shirt, but fortunately it doesn't need too much ironing. But if somebody, you know, you're presented with a photograph and somebody has a shirt, it's all creased, it's all crumpled, you take a different view, do you, to if it's neatly pressed with the iron?
Yeah, definitely, because we're all doing different activities throughout the day, and that's fine, that's normal. So I always like to think, what has this person worn that piece of clothing, and the requester has chosen that photo? Because at that moment must be really significant for either both parties or for one of them. And that's, I think that's really, really fascinating to know what's the significance in team.
What do you think? It's interesting, on Facebook sometimes, I don't know if you're a Facebook user at all, but there's recently been this thing which I've seen of, you know, men making themselves look like women, women making themselves look like men, and aging, and, you know, sometimes just an automatic turning yourself into a cartoon. Did you think of this like the computer-generated side of digital art compared to what an artist like yourself and your contemporaries can do?
I mean, technology definitely broadened possibility, and it has open eye to loads of different ways of producing art, and all style of art are completely valuable. But I wouldn't say that mine's better than the others. I think it's all very subjective. It all depends on what you like. It's just like the preferences. And people who've seen my art, oh, they really like it, then they'll, you know, donate money and then make a request. And for people who I've shown to them or been shown by other people, like, oh, this is good, in quotation mark. So that's fine. So I'm totally fine with that.
Interesting. So look, if somebody is saying, oh, I'd rather fancy having a digital portrait of Aunt Agatha to send to somebody, how do they go about that? How do people get in touch with you in order for you to do one of these drawings for them?
Yes, so we've got a Facebook group, so called Tzuchi Cambridge, so spelled T-Z-U-C-H-I Cambridge. So that's where we've carried out the direct works and volunteering for this fire specifically. And then on the banner, there are some details where you can just click and you fill up the details in a form and you upload a photo and then sent, and I will get through on the other end your message, your address.
That sounds simple enough. I'll try and remember when we pop this interview up on our website a little later on, I'll try and remember to attach those details as well so people can find that and perhaps get in touch with you. But Ethel, thank you very much for joining us on Cambridge Breakfast this morning. That is Ethel Mann, artist who is helping the people who lost many of their possessions in that flat fire in Arbury, which we were talking about, I think, a month or so ago now. It is 23 minutes after 8.
Cambridge Breakfast. Cambridge 105 Radio.
Two of Cambridge's punting companies are planning to resume operations. Let's Go Punting and the Traditional Punting Company will be returning to the backs from Saturday, the 4th of July. Simon is from Let's Go Punting and he's on the line now. Morning to you, Simon.
Good morning, Julian.
Good to speak to you. So how is this going to work then?
Well, obviously, we have been waiting for a significant period to try to restart our business, and we've been making plans to, plan for our new normal, really. So what we've done is we've taken the decision, because unfortunately there's no clear guidance for punting itself, but we've obviously rolled in the social distancing guidelines, which currently stand at 2 metres, which may well be going down, hopefully, in the next week or two.
Well, the boss is going to be making an announcement this afternoon, and normally what seems to be happening, if it's good news, then Boris comes out to do it. If it's bad news, he sends Matt Hancock to do the press conference. So we could be in for some good news this afternoon.
We hope so, But in the meantime, we've got a series of measures that we've taken to enhance our business for the customer in the main. So the highlights of that would be screens on the boats to protect the chauffeur from the customers and the customers from the chauffeur and the customers from each other. So household separation on the boats.
Right. So those are the sort of Perspex screens that we're beginning to see when we go shopping sometimes, for example.
Yeah, it's an unusual look for punting, obviously. It's not one a decision that we've taken lightly, but the whole business really is geared to having groups on the same boat together, but we put these screens in place to separate them to secure the safety of the customers. So over and above that, we've also developed a piece of software that basically creates a messaging service for our customers. So rather than stand in a traditional queuing type of format, we now can have people dispersed around the river area, picnicking, for example, enjoying a drink with a few friends or family, households waiting to get onto the boats. The message will then get sent out to the groups who are waiting. They approach the disembarkation point, and that's when we get them onto the river.
That's a rather nice idea. So they can avoid a queue, and they can have a picnic while they're doing so, and then this app alerts them that you're ready for them.
Exactly, yeah, that's what we've decided to do. And actually our business was heading that way anyway. So, but the planning stage, I mean, literally since lockdown, we've been all systems go with planning since that point. So it's been 3 months in the making, more or less.
And I gather you've been using beer kegs to make face visors. Now, plastic beer kegs, but I have to confess, I wasn't even aware that beer came in plastic beer kegs. So how have you done it and where are you getting them from?
So a lot of the craft ales these days are in, I think they're called key kegs, and it's a plastic keg, which is a laminated plastic keg, and you take out the inner part, which is the clearer plastic, which doesn't have any scratches and that sort of thing, clean it all up, and then effectively sort of divide one beer keg into eight sections and trim accordingly with the elastic, the foam, and hey presto. So it's a really good way for us to recycle what would normally be unrecyclable materials. So it's a very good idea that we've introduced.
Yeah, it's a very good use. I'm just thinking, because obviously social distancing rules mean that if you're, I don't know, if you're a family of six and you're all living together and you fancy to go punting, you can all turn up, can't you? So will you be having some punts which have barriers in and some which don't, or are they the sort of things you pop in and out accordingly?
Yeah, so they're removable. So basically, depending on which groups come down at a given time, we can set the boat up. Between each tour, the boats get fully cleaned down and the screens will be put in place depending on the type of combination of customers that we have on there. So it's quite a flexible way to do it. Over and above that, what we realised was that actually it's going to start to become more and more difficult to hear the chauffeur giving the tour, which is the point of obviously taking the tour to learn about the history of the beautiful College Backs, etc. So there's also an app which basically you can download before coming or actually just whilst you're sat on the green. And that is an app which will play the tour, and it actually identifies your location within a sort of 3 to 5 metre radius of where your phone is. So as you go along the river, it delivers all of your history to you.
Oh, that's pretty. So it actually recognises, I guess, GPS or something. It recognises where you are along the river and trips whatever it needs to trip in order to give you the details of where you are.
Exactly, yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
I like the sound of it. It must be, ordinarily, this would have been presumably peak season for you, and not just locals turning up, but tourists flying in from all over the place and deciding they want to spend a Saturday afternoon or even a Tuesday afternoon, for that matter, on the punt.
Yes, exactly. I mean, it's been, a sort of fairly cataclysmic start to the year, shall we say. You know, we've been closed, there's no income, and obviously we've got costs ongoing, so we're in a sort of negative situation right now. The international tourists won't be coming this year. We assume the quarantine is in place, which obviously is going to, prevent those people from wanting to come. So we're seriously hoping that we can generate some UK-based custom, and we hope that these measures are going to give people the assurances, obviously, to feel happy to get onto the boat.
Do you think that the measures, what you're doing, will that mean that actually there's going to be fewer people per punt, simply because if you've got a Perspex screen in the way, then you can't necessarily fit so many people in? So rather like the restaurants, exactly, not being able to have so many people visiting them, not the packed together tables we're used to in some places, it's going to be a similar situation.
I think so, yeah. I think we'll look to run, hopefully, if we can get going and, you know, we don't have this horrible second wave kind of sitting on the shoulder. But basically, if that doesn't happen, then we'd hope to run at approximately 70% capacity.
Mm. Well, I guess that's not too bad, considering what we've been through. Well, look, Simon, thank you very much for joining us. And this all starts on Saturday, the 4th of July, is when you're open for business once more.
Yes, thankfully, yeah, and we're very much looking forward to getting out and enjoying the sunshine. It's
we've finally got some weather which vaguely resembles June coming up today, so let's hope that holds through to the rest of the month and into July for you as well.
Thank you very much for
joining us. And Simon, you're very welcome. Simon from Let's Go Punting, who, along with the traditional punting company, returning to the back from Saturday, July the 4th.
Live and local.
Cambridge Breakfast.
Cambridge 105 Radio.